Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Mean Green Nation podcast, and we're all a little sad. It's a little sad, like the trombones on Bourbon Street. They sounded a little sad, you know? Even though everybody's dancing, it was a sad dance. North Texas football, the Mean Green, the Eagles, whatever you want to call them. New Denton, Old Denton. All looks the same when we go to the New Orleans Bowl, apparently. You go there and get beat. 50-30 loss to the Troy Trojans of Troy. The Trojans of Troy Trojans. They handled us pretty easily there. And it was bad.
They broke us.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to talk about here. And I think the immediate takeaway from, like, you know, the average fan, I guess the Rotten Tomatoes score of the review of this game was something like, oh my god, the defense got shredded. There was a kind of a controversy around friend of the show and super enthusiastic fan Austin saying, and I mean, he's not the only person that's mentioned this. Other people have. I think he's just the most vocal. So yeah, let's fire Troy Reffitt. That's been a thread. People have been saying that all season. And so this, you know, kind of came to a head after the game, like, all right, he has to go. I have seen enough. And then there's other people that are like, hey, it's a good bowl, good season, tough way to end, but you know, if you take a reasoned look at everything, you realize that this was, you know, one of the likelier scenarios to play out. I fall somewhere in that camp, although I was disappointed. We're going to talk about it here. We're going to get together and talk about it, and we're going to work through it as a family, right? Right, guys? That's what we do. And, you know, want to have a good time and make some jokes. Aldo, how did you experience this New Orleans Bowl?
Well, the music you're talking about, that was a funeral march. And I know there's a funeral, a Cajun style or a Zydeco funeral mm-hmm. march somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's the music I was listening to. But I may not be an overreactive fan, but it is pretty. It's more than disappointing. It was gut wrenching, you know.
Yeah.
All the elements that went into the loss. You know, playing a Sun Belt team. You can have your counter arguments, but we do want to distance ourselves, in general, away from the Sun Belt Conference because the look that we want to give as a team going from the Sun Belt to Conference USA is that we were going to a better conference. And then we go out and we lose to them in pretty spectacular fashion. And Troy has always been one of those teams that I dislike. nothing in particular except for the fact that they always beat us. I think we're now 7-2 against them.
2-7, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
2-7. Yeah. Thanks. Also Middle Tennessee went out there. Not Middle Tennessee. Western Kentucky went out there and lost to Georgia State. So the fact that we couldn't beat a Sun Belt team and that we lost so badly to a Sun Belt team after coming off a loss to FAU in the conference championship, as bad as that one was as well. I think all those factors came together and just made it a pretty bad taste in my mouth afterwards.
You know, I mean, those are all valid. I'm not going to tell you not to feel that way, but I'll tell you this. And, you know, I guess my counter arguments, and not really arguments, I just, you know, on my side, you know, I follow this game. I follow it very closely. I know the differences between, you know, a Troy and a Texas State. But if I tap my friend on the shoulder, well, you know, when I go back to work tomorrow and I say, hey, so, you know, Texas State, how'd they do in conference play? They're going to be like, well, I don't even know, man. I went to Texas State. I don't care. I don't know. I don't know the conference. I don't know. And I think there's a small number of people. And it may be that a lot of Mean Green fans are wanting to impress those people, and that's where the source of their frustration comes from. And again, I'm not talking about you here, but I don't fully understand it. I mean, you have to understand that most people think of every G5 school as the same, about the same. And, you know, saying, yeah, we lost the Sun Belt team, you know, comparing Troy. Like, Troy is to the Sun Belt Conference as Baylor was to, you know, a P5 school, as Baylor was to, like, you know, an SEC school, an upper-tier SEC school, like an Auburn or an Alabama, you know, like, Baylor sucked. But, you know, we're sitting here making fun of UTSA for being like, man, we beat a P5 school. Could you see how amazing? I'm like, yeah, but they were terrible. They were very bad. And so Troy was very good. You know, like, they were better than your average Sun Belt. They won the conference, right? They had one bad loss, and that was because they beat LSU, you know, rightfully. It was just kind of a hangover thing. But over the last two seasons, they've proved that they can beat and hang with anybody. They nearly upset Clemson at Clemson. You know, national champion Clemson. The one that beat Alabama. The one that gave Alabama a run in the previous one. They barely lost to them. So, I think we need to remember that Troy's a good team. And I look at this game as, hey, we stuck with a team that's real good. That was senior laden. Upperclassman laden. Yeah, they had some injuries, and yeah, they play in a, on average, lesser conference, but it's only barely. It's only just worse than us. I mean, I think if you've got Charlotte, right, and put them in the Sun Belt, Charlotte doesn't win very many games in that, if any, right? But at the same time, if you got FAU, they'd crush everybody in that league. If you got Troy and put them in our league, you know, Troy maybe, depending on what division you're putting them in, Troy's playing for the conference championship game, you know? And I don't know that I completely count them out against FAU. And so, I mean, that's the deal, is that, like, yeah, I get that we want to separate them. But I think the train left the station about jumping to a better conference around 2014 when Tulane and East Carolina and Tulsa, they all left the league. Those are the better schools. Those are the schools we wanted to be associated with. ECU has, like, 40,000 people at their games, right? Tulane, you know, they play in the Superdome all the time. And, you know, now they moved to on-campus stadium. They're kind of doing some things. They have some history. That's the kind of school we wanted to hang around with. But even then, like, Tulane, they wanted to cancel the program for a while. And then Tulsa, right? A team that's beat us all the time until we beat them in 2013. Like, those are the teams we wanted to associate with. Once they left and we accepted Middle Tennessee and Western Kentucky, two former Sun Belt schools, and FAU and FIU, a couple more Sun Belt schools. I mean, you know, again, the train was gone. We were basically the Sun Belt. And I think, was it Oaks, the guy from one of the Mississippi papers, he wrote something about that, like how the Sun Belt and the Conference USA basically should just kind of sit down and, you know, trade marbles and figure out a league that works best for all the teams to pair them up a little bit better. Because right now, you know, we have UTEP in a league with Charlotte, and that doesn't do anybody any favors, right? Especially in the non-football sports. So, you know, we could probably use a Texas State, you know, and, you know, they could probably use, they're getting rid of New Mexico State, but they can probably use or Western Kentucky or something like that, or Florida Atlantic or FIU. I don't know. I mean, my point is that, I can understand that feeling, but I think the Sun Belt brand and the Conference USA brand are closely related anyway.
Yeah, and then they're almost interchangeable just because of the prestige of it is long gone.
Yeah.
And the same can be said about maybe like a Midwest Conference or any of the, in fact, any of the G5s. Yeah. Mid-America, whatever. Exactly. Change out the names, and you lose a lot of respect because they're just not P5s.
Yeah, and a lot of that is because we don't have money, and we're losing money every year because we don't have a great contract. Now, ESPN or Disney bought Fox Sports, all their properties, so maybe that changes things up a little bit. Like, maybe, I don't know. Who knows what happens with that? But that's basically our only lifeline at this point. Because our TV contract is not very much better than the Sun Belt Conference at this moment. And that was really the big jump. When we had that nice boost in TV revenue, that's when we were separating ourselves. That's why we wanted to get out of the Sun Belt. Because the Sun Belt had a terrible TV contract. And now we have maybe the worst contract of the G5 school, so we can't even brag about that right now.
Yeah. But, I mean, cable is dying. We're switching over to internet streams, and that's why we're having, you're mentioning Disney. That's why we're looking at them to hopefully they can do something better, like be in sports, but with better contracts for streaming sports. But I guess we digress.
I think those are important points to talk about because, that's how we felt about it. Everybody's talking about, what does this all mean? We got blown out by a Sunbelt team, but what does that mean, right? We know what people tell you it means. Oh, my God, it's the worst thing ever. But is it? So we're even with LSU right now. That's what we're saying. If we're just talking about who loses to who, right? Okay, so then what, right? I think, what was it, ULM beat Alabama, right? Once upon a time, in Saban's first year. Did that ruin the program there? Did they get ruined, or did they win national championships? Did they continue doing the thing and trusting the process? The answer, by the way, is they continue trusting the process and building things. It doesn't derail your program. We don't need to shut it down. We don't need to fold up the tent. We don't need to implode Apogee Stadium. Everything's going to be fine. As far as the bowl game, how did it look on TV? I watched a little bit on TV, but then I fell asleep on the sofa this afternoon. Long weekend.
There weren't really many crowd shots if we're talking about attendance. Yeah. But it looked quality and production was good, I'm sure. Or I know a lot of people don't like the announcers that were on there. I don't remember their names. They weren't that great.
They were team announcers, yeah.
Yeah, but they were calling Mason Fine the G5, and I'm quoting here, the G5 Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that. I mean, we have to remember that ESPN owns this bowl, and they're trying to get, Joe Nobody or maybe an Oklahoma guy to watch this game. They're like, hey, you heard of Baker Mayfield. Well, let me tell you about a guy down in Denton, Texas. So, whatever. We'll take what we can get, right? It's hype. As far as my view, I was in the press box. And I think that gives you a nice little sanitized view of the game. You don't get the motion of it because you don't see the sideline. You don't see everybody complaining. And you have, the stadium announcer repeating what exactly just happened to you, directly into your ear. He's like, that was Mason Fied completing the pass to Turter Smiley for a gain of 4 yards. And so it kind of takes the drama out the game. So I felt like I saw a different game than a lot of other people. I didn't come away with it with the same kind of emotion that everybody else did. Everybody else, you could just see it on their face. I went down to the field, you could look at the Mean Green fans, they're just disappointed. And all the Troy sideline was hyped. They felt like they won the Super Bowl or something like that. The player, I remember 2013 Heart of Dallas Bowl. It was like that, but flipped, they were on the field, they were running around. This is a big deal to them. And it would have been a big deal to us too. So I don't like being disingenuous, and I'm talking to a segment of fans here, because if we would have won, we would have been hyped about it. But now that we lost, we want to say that it was not important, it was the worst bowl, and it was just, actually terrible, turns out. I disagree. That's my point there.
Yeah, and what I want to focus on is more about, whoever the opponent is, you want to win all your games.
Yes.
You want to go batting 100.
Yes. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the game. I don't want to rehash too much of it because, one, nobody cares. I don't think anybody wants to go, play for play. I knew it was bad as soon as Mason Fine turned around and, bobbled the ball. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Gone. I was like, oh, we're in for one of those days, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
But I had hope once Colt McDonald, who has been, I don't want to say maligned on this show, but let's just say he's been
nitpicked.
Yeah, he's been pointed out on this show and elsewhere on the internet. I mean, we like the dude, but, I think we're maybe we can improve in this position. And, he made a play. And scooping and scoring is a very difficult move. It requires a lot of athleticism, hand-eye coordination, and a little bit of speed.
Try chasing a bouncing ball, and it's like chasing a chicken.
Yeah. He scooped it up. He took off running. He didn't get caught from behind. Scored a touchdown. A very clutch touchdown. The defense got a lot. Everybody had a hot sports opinion about the defense. And I will say that Troy's numbers were not that amazing until they kind of, you know, added to it with the late couple of drives. But Troy didn't go up and down the field on them like that easily. A lot of their drives were short fields because the offense was turning the ball over. They had 5 turnovers in the game, but one was like in garbage time. So 4 turnovers when it counted. And I think up to like the early fourth quarter, basically when North Texas still had an outside chance of making something happen, the offense at that point was averaging 3.3 yards per play. And let me tell you something, guys. That's not going to win you any games.
Yeah, 4 turnovers, 3 turnovers, 2 turnovers. That's going to lose you a game. And they were putting the defense in difficult situations. Defense held out long enough. I know a lot of people were pointing out Eric Jenkins' play in the first quarter, but he was being put on
Damian Willis.
Yeah, off man coverage, about 10 yards off.
Yeah,
and all they were doing is just running an out route, and you can't really defend that, other than tackling him when he catches the ball.
Yeah,
and that's what Willis was doing, just catching the ball on out routes.
Yeah, there are two things about it. Like, I think Willis is like 6'4", 6'5", or something like that. And Eric Jenkins is like, 6 foot or something like that at best?
Maybe, yeah.
So he has a height advantage. And, you know, like, the reason they were running that route, the reason they were targeting him over there is that they thought, hey, we got an advantage. You know, it's like throwing a ball into the post to the big man. You do it because it's an easy pass and you think he has an advantage over there. Eric Jenkins played pretty damn well, even though Damian Willis was catching those passes. What needed to happen was Brandon Silvers needed to put it exactly where it needed to be, and Damian Willis needed to catch those passes, right? He caught a lot of them with outstretched arms, with his hands out, away from his body, kind of where you need the ball to be, you know? It was not like he was catching it on his hip and Jenkins was just getting burned. You know, Jenkins was in his pocket on a couple of those plays. I think on one of them, it was that 3rd and 8. It was a slant. It was early in the game, I think in the second drive of the game. No, I'm lying. It was the first drive, wasn't it? It was like 3rd and 3, false start. They got 3rd and 8. And then Brandon Silvers throws a slant route, and Jenkins was all over him. And he caught it, made the catch first down. You can't really do too much. There was another out route in the end zone. Eric Jenkins was,
All over him.
Yeah, he was. I mean, there's nothing you can do other than be, supremely talented instead of just really talented? I mean, whatever. There's not much you could say there.
Or adjust the coverage. And that's what North Texas did in the second quarter.
Yeah.
Coming here in defense of Eric Jenkins. They started pressing Willis. I can't remember his name. Wilkins. Whatever.
Damian Willis.
That dude.
Damian Willis.
And that's when the,
yeah.
That's when Troy started going quiet. They started going quiet until the third quarter when they said, oh, Ashton Princeton's not as fast as our slot guy.
Yeah.
And they started scoring on him too.
Yeah, I think they targeted him like 3 or 4 times in a sequence there. Once Ashton Preston committed a holding penalty, right? And then there was another time, I think it was just outside of their dude's reach. And Silvers just overthrew him a little bit. And then finally, there was that big the big touchdown to what was his name, McCormick. I forget his first name, Terrence.
That's right.
So yeah, I mean, and that play, they did a play action, right? Silvers turns around, fakes the pass, and that held Keyshawn McClain just a tad. And I mean, Keyshawn McClain was having to fly up there because they were running pretty well. That held him just a tad. He fired the ball in between Keyshawn McClain and Ashton Preston, hit the dude in stride, touchdown time. So if Ashton Preston is, you know, in the guy's pocket, like on his hip, then he can maybe make a play on the ball. If Keyshawn McClain doesn't, you know, hesitate just a little bit, and yeah, you can blame him, say that's, but that's what the play is designed to do. They are looking to him. They designed the play to bring the safeties to make him just hesitate enough. And, you know, Silvers made a great play. That was a great throw. He played really well in the game. He was, you know, they mentioned on the broadcast, the part that I saw, that his accuracy goes in and out, and you can see that. There were times where he looked like Drew Brees out there, and there were other times you're like, okay, we can get to this, we can, you know, rattle this guy. I mean, Keyshawn McClain got an interception. There was a chance. It was 22-20 at one point, and
the half, I believe. Yeah,
we come out and shoot ourselves in the foot. You know, like the offensive line didn't play well. Mason Fine in particular didn't play well. Mason held the ball too long. Yeah, he had some.
He was off target. Yeah.
Like that one sack where he, I think he got hit real hard. I think it was a fumble, right? Was it that fumble? I forget the second fumble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He should have passed it really quickly, and instead he pump faked, and I guess the play wasn't there, and he hesitated just a second, and I think it was Riley Mayfield, the right tackle. You know, he's sliding to his left. He's blocking the way the play is supposed to block. The whole play is going to the left. The pass needs to be quick. It needs to be now. And it wasn't. It was now plus maybe let me pump fake and see if something's open. That's how you make bad plays. That's how it's on Mason Fine and not just the offensive line. I know there's a lot of criticism of the line and this one. I know Jordan Murray was pretty upset about the whole game, and a lot of people were talking about Jordan Murray being, you know, a scapegoat there. Some of that was on Mason Fine. He began to throw off his back foot, and, you know, he had Rico Bussey open a couple times. He floated it, passes knocked down. And, I mean, if Mason Fine, he sets his feet, fires the ball the way he knows how and the way he has done, those are touchdowns, and it's a completely different game.
Yeah, and those last two games, he got sacked 12 or 15 times, something ridiculous.
Yeah, it was like three against Rice that I know of, right? It might have been four. Nine times against FAU, and then six times in this one. So
he started hearing footsteps, and he was moving when the pressure wasn't there, and he wasn't throwing quick enough when the pressure was there. Like I think the bad fumble, the first one, it was supposed to be to Nick Smith. I think it was a wheel route.
Yeah.
That he was going to throw it. He decided not to throw it, but there was nowhere else to go, and he just got a strip sack. And you don't want to be making those kinds of plays at the end of the season. We can make excuses for him all we want. You know, he's a sophomore. He's young. He's inexperienced, but he's in the 14th game of the season, and he's been looking great. We know he can make the right call, but he's having an off game. And it sucked that he had an off game for the bowl game.
I think Seth Luttrell said there was like a communication error on that play, on one of the fumble plays, but I think it was that one he was talking about. Before we continue, because I know you wanted to hit some points here, I think one thing we have to talk about, maybe now's the time to talk about it, I don't know. I wanted to bring on a guest, and we were having a Twitter conversation about it. I wanted to bring him on so we could talk about it a little bit more. But you notice I said we didn't play so well against Rice. We didn't play so well against FAU, obviously, right? And we didn't play well in this one. And one of the things that has been a problem has been pass protection. Well, how did we only allow like 20-something sacks in the first 11 games, and then, you know, 20-something sacks in the last three games? What changed? Oh, was it our all-conference running back that went out that was super amazing at pass protection? Do you think maybe that had something to do with it? I do. I think Jeff, you know, I'm going to pat myself on the back again. I made this point on the last podcast. I was like, I think that Jeff is underrated, even though, you know, I keep calling him the best offensive player on the team. And while Mason Fine is good and he's been putting up amazing numbers and, you know, he's super tough, Jeff can make a play, and when there's no play to be made, right? You know, he's the guy that can, he does it in pass protection, and he does it, he breaks a tackle that would stop it for 3 yards, or 3 yard loss, and turns that into a 40-yard gain. That would have made this offense go in this game, in the FAU game a little bit, and then the Rice game some. I mean, even though Nick Smith had a great game in that one. It's the little things, and we can't know every possession, unless I grabbed a coach here and we turned on the film and we had him go through the play-by-play, and he said, all right, right here, this is the problem. This is the call. This is the protection. Here's how it broke down. This is what happened. We don't have that right now, and I don't know if we'd be super interested in doing that right at this point. I'll just say that I think that Jeff Wilson would have made a difference. Does it matter? No, because it's not like we can do anything about his injury. But maybe just for you, keep that, right? Put in a little locket, put it in your pocket, and remember that.
Bury it deep inside and never bring it up again.
No, I mean, just remember how good Jeff Wilson was. So when you're telling these stories, you know, like I tell Lance Dunbar stories. I know nobody was there at those games, but he was amazing. He was the only offense that North Texas had for a couple seasons there, and it was not just like, well, you got 100 yards. It's like, no, it's 150 yards and 3 touchdowns and a couple of 80 yarders or something like that. It was crazy. So when you're telling the stories about Jeff Wilson, tell those things that he was very important. He did a lot of different things. He wasn't just a runner. At one point, I'll steal the point he made right now. His former player, Calvin Miner. We're going to hopefully get him on the show later this week or something. I want to talk about recruiting. I want to talk to him. But he said, I think if he didn't have the injuries that he had, throughout his career, that he would have been the all-time leading rusher at North Texas. And I said, I believe it because, he had, 1,200 yards. He would have had more opportunities, but he kept getting dinged up. Last season, he got dinged up, this season, obviously. He could have touched Lance Dunbar's record there. But shoulda, woulda, coulda is not a fun game to play. And it doesn't bring you any peace or anything like that. But it's important to remember that. He was a special player here at North Texas. And we're going to miss him. We definitely miss him in this bowl game.
Yeah, well, I'll pour one for him.
What are you drinking now? What are you drinking today?
This is called, a Texas Ale Project Fire Ant Funeral.
Sweet.
And what I was going to say about Jeff Wilson is, yes, I do agree he would have made a difference in these games. But if we're watching the line, they were letting 2-3 guys through at a time. There's only so many guys that Jeff Wilson can block. So there was a combination of all those factors that you said. The line was off. I don't know if there's just injuries or we were just, out-athleted.
There's a whole lot of people that say, hey, look, FAU had a better defensive line than our offensive line. Troy had a better defensive line than our offensive line. And, Rice had some talent. I forget the guy's name, number 44, the guy they were moving around. They're all-time sack leader guy. I mean, he made some sacks. So I think there's something to be said about the talent that we're facing. I'm just agreeing with you and supporting your point there.
This is a topic for another conversation, but hoping that, in the coming years that the classes that we have brought in, or Latrell specifically has brought in and developed while these guys are playing, can come in and produce and protect fine a little bit better. Because if you can't protect them, you can't keep them healthy, and you can't, win games without your quarterback. I mean, you can talk about, it's not a slight towards Shambor, but we don't know what we really have in him. We've only seen a few good plays from him. How can he handle a whole game? But that's a whole other conversation to have.
Yeah, I mean, Alec Morris, former starting quarterback for North Texas last year, I think he tweeted, he was like, man, somebody protect that guy. Every time I look on it, he's taking some big hits. I saw him take big hits. And again, I think, friend of the show, Ryan Gannot on Twitter, I think he's right for the Daily. He said, I'm hoping for the day when we're not talking about how tough he is all the time. Like, I'd rather not. And like, I totally agree. Yeah. I don't want to see, I don't want the other team's defensive line saying, oh yeah, the guy's tough. I think UTSA was saying that, like, yeah, we hit him with everything we got. And, kept getting back up. Like, I don't want to hear that. Yeah, let that be in the past now, Let's have him not take giant shots to the face guys that outweigh him by 200 pounds, huh?
And a guy that I compare him with, just not his playing style, but just what he reminds me of when he does stuff like this, is Tony Romo, where he's spinning out of and ducking or doing this or that out of sacks and then making a play afterwards. But over time, that really put a beating on Romo's body, and he ended up having to quit football. And so it's that I don't want that to happen to Mason Fine as well. I want him to stay healthy, you know, not be ailed by chronic injuries for the rest of his life just because we couldn't get a line that to protect him.
Yeah, I mean, again, some of that is on Mason Fine himself, but it's all interrelated. Like, I mean, you take a big hit, yeah, I'm going to get happy feet, you know, and I'm going to lean back a little bit when I throw it because I don't want to take a hit. It's just human nature. I mean, as you can coach and prepare to have not have that happen, to work that habit out of it. But, I mean, you know, like, what is it Mike Tyson said? Everybody has a game plan until you get punched in the mouth. Yeah, you know, like, you just kind of react that way. And this is another case of the offense. Like, if the offense wasn't perfect, then, you know, this team was going to lose. Like, the defense did some things. It scored. It was, like, the first defensive score that I think they've had all season. And, you know, that's important. It's kind of what we were hoping for. However, we have to acknowledge that it was a self-inflicted wound by Troy. It was a bad snap. It's not like, you know, Colton McDonald burst in there and blew up a mesh and then, you know, the handoff and then scooped and scored it. You know, he was just kind of there. And it's not a knock on him, I'm just saying.
But we took that opportunity made a positive play.
Yeah, that's great that they did that because I think, was it against Iowa, right? We had a scoop. And Ulaasi, yeah, he like fumbled it back to them. I mean, so there have been times when we had opportunities to take advantage of mistakes with their team, and we haven't taken full advantage of that. This obviously was full advantage taken, right? Scoop, score, touchdown, we're back in this thing. And I mean, the offense had two touchdown drives in the first half, one in the second, and that was a garbage time touchdown. And I mean, you can point to this in the FAU game and say there's a lot of similarities between the conference championship game and this one. You know, what does it all mean? Well, I mean, I think it means that the freshmen and sophomores, you can see the lack of depth in there, and maybe how the 9 wins in Conference USA were just taking advantage of Conference USA. And I don't think that's a bad thing to say because they did what they're supposed to do, and they know what the challenge is ahead of them. And they have the time and opportunity to improve. And that makes me excited about next season.
Yeah, and I want to take this opportunity. You know, we've been talking about where they've ended up at the end of the season. You know, a bowl loss and a conference championship loss. But they are 9-5. 9-5? Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know if college football season, players need to be playing 14 games, man. That's a lot of games.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure on your body.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, where were we 2 seasons ago? 1-11. You know, and a lot of people keep mentioning 1-11, and we still have the luxury to be able to do so because it's only been a couple seasons. We were 1-11 facing one of the worst FBS losses in college football history, and fired our head coach on the spot. You know, locker room, whatever the story you want to believe. We fire our or
like, allow if it was up to me, district. I would have fired him at halftime. So, I mean, you know.
allow the athletic director to you know, go build a sushi restaurant, you know, live his dream.
Lifelong dream, man. Yeah, I had a sushi on the brain, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure he at Border Regions meetings, he was just drawing sushi rolls all over his notebook.
Yeah.
So Littrell comes in, brings in Troy Reffitt, and we install these offense and a defense that take advantage of a roster that is, you know, short and small. I mean, short and slow, which we were. You know, we shouldn't shy away from the fact that we were not big enough and not fast enough. And with the systems that they put in place, they allowed that allowed the team to take advantage of that. Well, whole bunch of attrition happened. Littrell had 1 month to put a whole class together because he only had one recruit committed.
Yeah.
They come in, win 5 games, go to a freaking bowl game his first year, and then the next year overachieve and go 9 wins. And, you know, I say overachieve because I still don't think this roster has the talent, and we saw that against FAU, we saw that against twice, and we saw that against Troy, that we don't have the talent to be able to take over games. We have enough talent. We have enough scheme to be able to hang with teams and then, you know, use that opportunity and out-coach or out-play a couple times in order to win a game by a point, win a game by 7 points. We have enough of that. And that creates a baseline. In a lot of these 50-50 games where we lost last year, we won this year. And that, I think that's part of what you were saying about taking advantage of Conference USA is – while there's not a lot of talent, or at least great teams in Conference USA, we're pretty much all on par, and we were able to win these 50-50 matchups, not by luck, but by making the plays, executing when we needed to. And we lost those games, not just because we weren't able to execute, you know, make those plays, but we just got outplayed and outmatched. And there's nothing wrong with that because where we are in the rebuild process, we don't have the talent yet, but here we are in the conference game, our conference championship game. Here we are in a bowl game after a 9-win season. I think we need to put that in perspective that we outkicked our coverage and we are in a great spot to keep building off this foundation where we're graduating a whole bunch of old players and bringing in some of our system guys.
Yeah. I mean, you made some good points there. I don't know that I would agree wholeheartedly with the fact that we outkicked our coverage or like we were playing above our heads. I think you just kind of find your level. There's a concept that you get kind of promoted until you suck. You know what I mean? Right. I forget the actual principle, but it's basically that, you know, like say, we'll just say like you'll have levels A, B, C, D all the way down to Z, right? Well, you're good at level Z and you keep moving up. And then, you know, you're great at level D now. And then you're going to go to level C. But you're not so great at level C. Well, then they'll just keep you there. They're not going to just drop you down one. They're like, you know what? You're a better level D than you are C. They're just going to leave you there. And so you're kind of mediocre at that point, right? You realize how you suck, right? You're excellent in all these other levels, and you kind of suck at this point. I think you can kind of see elements of this here, and maybe it looks like we're bad because we're playing really good teams, right? You know, we beat a USM, which had flaws, beat a UTSA, which had flaws, UAB was not quite there yet, ODU is not quite there yet, Rice is terrible, UTEP is terrible, Army didn't have a defense, right? Our offense is too good. So then we get, you know, what does that earn us, right? It gets us promotion to the championship game. It's what we earned. And then we realize we're not good enough. And is that an indictment upon us? Does that mean that actually those other games are frauds? No, it just means that, you know, we've found our level. We're not good enough to win a conference title game against FAU in its current form. And so, you know, we're saying similar things here. And that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's like bad. Like, well, we're just not. Yeah, we're not quite there yet. But it's also this version of the team. It just, you know, it's not good. We're second best in Conference USA, and that there's no shame in saying that. Like, FAU was clearly better than everybody else. We only lost to one other Conference USA team, and we lost to them twice. You know, that's it. Mm-hmm. FAU was so much better than us. Okay, we'll get better. That's the plan, right?
And, you know, and what you're saying about, to bounce off what you're saying, North Texas got to the conference championship game at a point where I think they weren't, I don't want to say expecting to. I don't think they were ready yet as a team the way they've been developing yet. And I mean that as in a positive way, because think about how they'll be when their roster is developed the way they want it to be.
I got you. And, I mean, the problem is that, like, when, you know, it's kind of like when the East was down in the early 2000s and like the Nets won, they go to the finals. I mean, is it the Nets were not a good team. You dropped the Nets into the Western Conference in basketball, then they're not good, right? Like, I mean, there was like a stacked team on that side, like the Spurs, even the Mavericks are good. Lots of teams are good. I mean, but what are the Nets going to do? Just say, well, you know what? We don't really deserve to be in the finals. We're just going to go quit. Like, no, you play a game. That's where you get, right? So, there's no shame in winning the games that you won against the teams you beat. If Louisiana Tech doesn't want to live up to their talent and expectations, because they had similar things going on. They're young, but they had their coaches in place. They had talent. They had all these things in place. And so, you know, they can't really make the same kind of excuses that they didn't come from a 1-11 rebuild, right? What did they come from? From competing for conference title seasons. So why are they not there? Should they not have beaten us based on their, like, built-in advantages, right? All those things, like, okay, they got youth and guys that are inexperienced. Well, North Texas has younger guys, right, and not as deep a roster. And we beat them on their home field, right? Okay, so, I mean, that's Louisiana Tech's fault, right? But are we going to feel sorry about that? Say, well, yeah, really, y'all are a little bit more ready to take on FAU than we are, so we're going to let you do it. No. I understand your point. I think it's important to recognize that, I mean, the other teams play a part in it, right? Like, UTSA was supposed to be ready, right? They're supposed to have the great defense, and they had a coordinator that Nick Saban said was good, right? Nick Saban's like, come here, son. You're going to be on my squad now. So they were supposed to be put together. They had a senior quarterback, a game built on the run and ball control, an NFL defensive end, an all-conference linebacker, corners that can hit you. You're not supposed to score against UTSA. And then we went down the field 98 yards in, you know, less than a minute. So, I mean, that was a chance. That was UTSA's chance to beat us. Everything that you described, all those characteristics of our team that you described. Young, not ready, the roster's not quite there yet, too early in the building process, and they couldn't beat us. So that's, I mean, what?
Yeah, that's exactly my point.
Yeah.
We're underdeveloped as a team, yet we beat UTSA, we went and beat La Tech, we beat Southern Miss, we beat UAB, all these good teams, and we're still not good enough yet.
Well, yeah,
to the potential that we can be, and when we hit that potential, I think it's going to be freaking awesome. We're going to be a monster.
Yeah, but I think the flip side of this coin is that some of those 50-50 games could easily have gone the other way, right? And I mean, our offense was really good, and I think we should again remember. I told you to remember. You buried down that Jeff Wilson, how good he was. Coin, right? You got that nice and minted, and put it in your pocket. Bring it out. Let's look at it again right now. And let's remember how good he was and how much of the offense was on his shoulders. I think that's going to be an issue. I mean, you look at this season. Last three games, the other factor was that Jalen Guyton was not himself basically since the FAU game, right? Ever since he got hit there. I mean, he scored a couple against, Army. He took that big hit. It hasn't been the same. I mean, he played a couple of downs in this one, but it was almost like he's not out there. And
yeah, after that concussion against Army, it was just a different person. And I think he was just playing injured, maybe a decoy or something, and hopefully he'll get healthy.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of that. And, you know, we talk a lot about depth. And this is where, when you get to your 14th game of the season, right, and you're like, we need somebody else to step up here, right? We need another guy to show something. And, you know, like, this is maybe where we're missing some dudes, right? I mean, famously, right, Ohio State, they had their quarterback injured a couple of seasons ago, and they put in their third-string quarterback, and it leads them to a national championship, right? That's kind of an extreme case of depth. I don't know that we can do that in this conference, but who knows? Yeah. To your point about, like, we're not quite there yet, that's how you get there, right? That's how you get there. Florida Atlantic was just too much for a lot of teams. I think there was a lot of senior. I mean, I think Al Shire, he's a senior, right? I think Antonio Woods is a senior.
Al Shire might be a junior, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, they had a lot of talent, and it was, like, senior talent. And so somebody just needed to coach them up. And I've been saying that. Whatever you want to say about their recruiting classes and their recruiting ability, really what Lane Kiffin and Kid Brow's talent is in coaching, is in scheming. And they had a lot of hungry players that are just, I mean, they were underperforming for 3 or 4 years. It was almost quite a perfect storm. I am not surprised that they turned it around. I am a little surprised that they turned it around to this extent so quickly.
Well, and they started out with a really good team to begin with.
We started out with a depleted roster. Yeah, they had talent, and they had coaches. They bought in, right? They're like, yes, let's do it. But It makes sense, though. Seniors that underperform, like you said, talented team that underperformed for a couple years, they're hungry and they're ready to learn. They bought in and they proved everybody wrong, you know? I thought they'd be good, but I didn't think they would be there. I thought they'd be like UAB good, you know? We're like, God, look, they're pretty good. They're winning games. Look at that. Look at FAU doing something. Not complete and utter domination of Conference USA. I didn't think that was going to be the case.
Yeah, because the way they played Navy and the way they played... Who else?
Buffalo? They lost to Buffalo.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't look very good. They, what's-his-face, Driscoll was way off. The defense wasn't playing well. And I was like, oh, well, this team sucks.
Yeah, we don't got to worry about them too much. But they turned it on. And, you know, they did their deal. So my point about all that is that next year is going to be next year. We're not going to get those 50-50 games. Maybe we don't get the Mike Lawrence 50-yard bomb. Was it the 40, 43-yard catch that put us in position that really helped us?
Oh, we still will.
I mean, you have to be ready for those kind of things to not happen, right? You know, maybe it doesn't shake out quite the same way. UAB is going to be good. UTSA will, I don't know how good they'll be. They lost their coordinator. They lost their offensive coordinator. They're basically going to a completely new offense. They're getting a new guy to coach defenses. Lost, you know, a couple of their best players.
They lost a good defensive coordinator, right?
Yeah. That guy, he went to, you know, like I said, he went to Alabama.
That's how good he was.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, the thing is that, like, you know, UTSA gets a bunch of talent and you can win with talent, but I think they might be the FAU of the Conference USA West, where they are surprisingly high in the recruiting rankings, but they never quite put it together. And I mean, I was saying that since last season, they hired Wilson. I'm like, you get the guys there, but you need somebody to coach them up, and I don't know if they have that. Conversely, you look at the recruiting rankings now, and we're like, man, we're developing these guys, but I don't know if we're bringing them in. You know, like we can coach them up, we can out-scheme them, but where are the guys? You know, we need the guys.
Yeah, and that can be said about the defense, about the trenches. But it feels like, in combination with last year's recruiting class, with the guys like offensive linemen, and especially the skill position players. And then this year, so far, the recruiting class is looking pretty darn good compared to the Latrell's last two classes. So that's a good sign that the, you know, we've been talking about, in order to recruit better, you got to win. It's the chicken or the egg kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they were able to find those Jimmys and Joes to put in and execute the X's and O's, which they did awesomely this year, and that's helping bring in my opinion, a little bit better talent. And you just got to keep building on this rebuild, this turnaround that they're doing here at North Texas. And I think I'm pretty excited about next season, because in terms of, if we want to put us into perspective, our season into perspective with Troy, which they've got pretty similar storylines, and they talked all about it on the ESPN broadcast as well, is this, they're in their, I think, third year with Neil Brown. Mm-hmm. They went 10 wins last year, and I think 10 or 11 wins this year now.
Yeah, that was your 11th win.
So 11th win. So we went 9 wins this year. I feel like we can, that's a pretty decent bar.
You're calling 12 wins next year? You saying undefeated next? I mean, I understand your point. And, you know, like I always say, I know, like Seth Luttrell, like we don't care about competing for conference championships every 4 years. We want to compete from every year. And like I said, I mean, I was kind of on, like he was like, we're going to bowl game this year, last year. And I was like, you may be reaching there, buddy. But, you know, you look at the schedule and you're like, you know, there's nobody that's clearly better than North Texas, I'm talking about last year, on the schedule other than Western Kentucky, Louisiana Tech, and probably Southern Miss. But then Southern Miss lost their quarterback. Next thing you know, they're a very beatable team, right? That's how Conference USA works. Right? This year, we looked at the schedule. One reason I picked 9 wins is that I didn't see any clearly better teams on the schedule, right? I'm like, Louisiana Tech, yeah, maybe they're probably the most put-together team. Southern Miss, if they figure out the quarterback situation, they can probably beat us at home. But everybody else, are they better? Are they clearly better? No, I don't see it, right?
Yeah, and there's a lot of parity.
Yeah, and so same thing next year. We're going to go to UAB. That's going to be interesting, right? But I like our quarterback situation. I think we can win on the road in that kind of game. You know, I still feel good about that kind of thing. Like, UAB, even at home, is not clearly better than us, right? It's a matter of execution playing better. Who else we got? We got FAU at home. That's going to be different, but FAU is probably a team we can say clearly better, right? They beat us twice handily. We'll go ahead and give them that one. We travel to UTSA. Do you think that they're clearly better than us? We got a couple new coordinators.
No.
Yeah, like, it doesn't, it's up in the air. You look at everybody in the West. Rice is going to be better, but how much? Are they going to be better that they're going to jump up and beat us? I don't know. UTEP has Mike Canales out there. Is he going to just, I heard he's recruiting an Iowa quarterback. guys, history repeating itself.
Kelvin, full circle.
Yeah, he's like, you know what? The best quarterbacks are in Iowa. I know it. You know, maybe he hits on it, and that guy's going to throw for like 5,000 yards next year. We're going to look stupid. So, my point is, in the West, maybe like UAB is going to be good. USM, they're going to have a good quarterback. I think they're bringing in another dude. They have Quadra Griggs, who on his day looked good. They have Keon Howard, who on his day looked good. They're losing like one of the best running backs in Conference USA. Ito Smith's going to be gone. I think he got like an invite to something.
Senior Bowl.
Yeah. He's a good player. So, okay, now that kind of puts them in the same position as us, right? We lose our catalyst back. They lose their catalyst back. But they're going to be in Denton. That's going to be change things up. We flip with Old Dominion. We go there. And who else do we flip with on their side? Dude, we only the two? We play one other one.
Old Dominion and FAU.
Yeah, those are the two cross-division games, I think. That's it, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, looking at the schedule that way, just saying, is anybody clearly better than us? I count one team, and that's Florida Atlantic. So if we play like we think, like, you know, 80-90% of our team's capabilities, and I don't think we did that against Troy, then I think we give ourselves a good chance to win those games, and I feel good about next year. We got SMU. They're going to be different. I think, you know, they're going to go through the transition, teaching everybody how to do the run and shoot is difficult. You know, I don't think SMU is going to be that tough.
I mean, and they haven't been in the past. We just haven't been able to. It's like we just don't show up with SMU.
Yeah, that first game last year, there's a lot of questions. I don't think Seth Luttrell or Graham Harrell thought that Alec Morris is going to play like that. They're kind of hoping for better. It didn't quite work out. They also didn't have receivers to stretch the field. So this year, we stretched the field. And I said before, I thought the offense was executing. We had third down issues. But our defense was kind of learning stuff. Quick note, we have like 8 minutes left in this thing. The defense, scheme versus players. I think you need both. You need a coach that schemes up to get the best out of his players. And, you know, I think you need players that fit the scheme, right? There's a combination there. You know what I mean? Like, you have to, you look at your 11 players and then, you know, the guys behind them. So it's 17 to 22, right? And you pick out a scheme that's going to get the most out of the most. There's going to be guys that don't fit no matter what you do, right? 80-90%, you know, at best is what you're going to reach there. Unless you can recruit to your scheme, right? To your plan. And, you know, like, maybe if you get a guy, you're like, you know what, we're just going to have to change this a little bit because he's so good that maybe we don't ever flip the defensive ends, but this guy can play anywhere and we're going to get some real advantages if we move him over, you know? Yeah, then you do that. But I understood the philosophy that Troy Ruffett was calling and putting in place. And I think he's a smart coach, and I think he knows what he's talking about, and I think that he was missing some pieces. He is who he is. Go ahead.
Yeah, and when you're talking about missing pieces, that was pretty evident when we played big, fast teams like FAU and Troy. It is we just couldn't keep up physically with them. We couldn't push them out of the way physically with them. And I think that, in terms of recruiting, I think that's improving on paper, at least, fitting system guys in there. We bringing in a lot of that safety in particular, if he comes here, and Kavion, Or Kayvon?
I think that dude might go to Illinois, man. Illinois is knocking on his door and trying to get him over there.
But Illinois sucks.
Somebody tell that kid that. That's the deal, is that, like, I really would like to have seen this defense with Bryce English out there clogging up the middle. Yeah.
It's a 3-3-5. You need a nose tackle and you need an inside linebacker that are studs, that are that star in the NCAA 14.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was looking before the season at like people talking about how they scheme up their 3-3-5, and they're like, yeah, you need your middle linebacker to be an absolute stud, a run stuffer type, a guy that just, you know, he's going to lead your team in tackles, that he's going to clog up the middle, and you're going to force him to run right or left. And when they do that, your outside linebackers, who are more like your Ejia, more like your Brandon Garner, that can run and fly and cover, they're going to do that. But you need somebody in the middle that's going to just dominate. Like, Al Shaair from FAU, like a Tua Afa a little bit. Who's another good linebacker? The dude from UAB. I forget his name right now.
Shaq Jones?
Yeah. He kind of plays on the end a little bit, but we're looking at a couple of those dudes. This guy, what's his name? Saafi, is that his name? Mm-hmm. That guy looks, he's like a hybrid defensive end linebacker type. I think they want to put him at the Wheeler spot, but I mean, say he's gonna play linebacker. He's like 6'2", 235 or something like that.
Yeah, he's a big dude. Yeah, he looks more in this system. He looks more like the outside linebacker, defensive end kind of guy.
And the Josh Wheeler type, yeah, the Jack linebacker.
Exactly,
yeah.
The Jack linebacker. So we're bringing in, so far we're bringing in a lot of outside guys, nickelback, outside linebacker, defensive end type guys, and we still haven't brought in or grabbed a guy that'll fit that inside linebacker spot of yet.
Yeah, we've put out a lot of offers for those dudes, and we were looking to fill. I mean, you could look at the offer sheets, the visits, the interest. We're trying to get some guys to fill up the middle. We'll see in a couple days. By the time maybe some of you are listening to this, we will have known who signed on December 20th. I mean, signing day doesn't end till February 2nd or whatever, but we'll see what's up. It's the early signing period. Guys are signing.
Yeah, if we do get that guy, I don't think it'll be until the February signing period, because it's going to be a guy who waited a little bit too long, and we swoop in and grab him.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that, like, the trail's been good at getting guys late. This whole thing is weird. Like, nobody knows how it plays out yet, because this is the first time it's ever happened. One issue that everybody has with it is that if you're successful in this season, it's hard to recruit, because you're out here in the conference championship game. You're out here in the bowl game, early bowl game. You know, what are you going to do? You can't go out and recruit. There's three recruiting weekends, and you're playing on two of them. That's not good. You know, it may be different next year when we get a 10th assistant, and we'll figure out who that's going to be on the 9th of January. Lots of stuff happening right now, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it all works out. I think the takeaway, everybody, is that, hey, this is a good season. New Orleans is great. I think everybody that was down there was having a good time, right? And that was the point. Funny thing, the students, they got that student package. They went through Shreveport. And I was asking a couple of them. I was like, so what did you think of Shreveport? And like, man, there's nothing there. And I was like, yeah, I knew it. I told you, man. Like, that's
why. You drive on the outside, though. That's a little unfair.
Yeah. The other part is that, like, Florida State, I mean, again, look, you have to do your part. You as a fan. When people are like, who they lost to Troy? And you got to say, look, Troy's won 21 games in the last two seasons. They beat LSU. They're a really damn good team. They won, you know, back-to-back conference titles. They're a good team. And you put them up against a Florida State, they might win that one. They probably win that one. You maybe even put them favored in that one. Troy's a good team, and there's no shame in losing to them, even the way that we lost to them. North Texas is an up-and-coming team. We're going to be good. And this season was a success. We had a winning season, 9 wins. You know, the mission is to win a bowl game, but, you know, whatever. That we got to a bowl game, and it was a fun bowl. It was a destination to that place. I'd be happy to go to New Orleans Bowl again. I'd be happy to go to the Hard Dallas Bowl again. You know, really any bowl. We go to New Mexico Bowl, I'll be excited about it. We'll go figure out what there is to do in Albuquerque. Even if it's in Shreveport or Montgomery or Birmingham or even Boca Raton, wherever they send them, you can get some fun out of it because that's the whole part of it, right? I think, not to sound too, you know, Christmassy, it's about love. The season is about friendship. But it is. It's about having a good time. It's all entertainment, man. You know, like, none of it means anything. We can make it important, but try to leave it as important as it is. Don't make it overly important where you lose sight and you can't have any other fun around it. I have fun watching these guys play. They put on a good show, right? I had lots of fun being entertained by them. They had a good time. They'll look back at it and say that was a good, fun season. They're not happy with it, right? Seth Luttrell, he's getting paid to worry about it and think about it. So let him do it, you know? And we'll judge him next season. He is 0-2 in bowl games. I think that's a thing that's going to come up. Seth, yeah. You're 0-2 in bowl games.
So that's what I was going to talk about is, you know, we've had one really good season so far out of two and couldn't capitalize on, so far, three postseason games. Is that a trend? Can we get better? And, you know, because people are going to start questioning if you're able to prepare for big games or whatever comment you want to make. But he's got to start winning postseason games. If you're going to get to the postseason, then you better be able to compete in the postseason and not get blown out.
Yeah, he had three postseason games, and he's 0-3, right? One bowl, two bowls, one conference championship game. One can be forgiven. FAU is clearly a better team. I mean, you can match this up again, and we're probably going to lose another one. But that Army game, probably should have beat them.
Should have won.
Yeah, and then this Troy game, I think we could have had a better offensive performance. Here's the deal, though. Next season, Mason finds a junior. And when you have an upperclassman quarterback, you don't get as much leeway, right? Freshman quarterback, you go, well, it's a freshman out there making freshman mistakes. Sophomore one, you're like, you know, he's still young. But he's going to be real good. Junior year, you're like, you can't make those kinds of plays. You're a junior. And then you look at the coach, like, wait, what are you teaching him, coach? I fully expect him to be really good next season. I think Mason Fine, I heard he wants to put on 10 or 15 more pounds. You know, he's a hard worker, and he has a chip on his shoulder, and he has an ugly taste in his mouth after this game. And, I mean, we talked about his improvement. You wrote about his improvement from year one to year two. He went from 1,000 yards to 4,000 yards, from 6 touchdowns to 31 touchdowns. You know, like from, was it 64? Yeah, 59% to 60, was it 64%?
Mm-hmm. 113 QB rating to, you know, 10 million QB rating.
Yeah. Yeah, I fully expect him to be better next season in all the ways that we thought he was pretty poor. I mean, his TD interception ratio is a lot better. You know, I mean, I think the whole team's going to be better. I'm looking forward to it. And we'll see exactly. We'll watch it. We'll be monitoring it. We'll follow it. We'll talk about it in there.
You know, Seth Luttrell is able to take this team and have so much success with it. And he's setting a certain level of expectation. It's kind of like when we went from Todd Dodge to Dan McCartney. Dan McCartney, you know, as horrible as he did a couple of those seasons, he set a certain level of expectation of, we need to have standards here. We need to win a lot of games. We are able to go to bowl games and win them in an awesome way. So he set the bar there. Now Luttrell's come in and is setting the bar even higher. We have, with this kind of talent, we can coach and go to a conference championship game. So he's setting these bars that he needs to be able to exceed year after year after year. I mean, I'm not saying I expect conference championships games every year, but at least be able to compete for tops in the division, or at least early on in the season in the talks, in the running best teams.
I say all the time, every year we should at least get 6 wins, should be competing for 6 wins. And, you know, like, no 2-11 seasons. We don't need that around here. But, like, La Tech had an off year, right? They went to back-to-back, or, you know, they were competing for conference titles, and then this year they barely make a bowl game. That's not terrible, but they got 6 wins pretty, you know, like, they beat the teams they're supposed to beat. There was like, hey, what's going on here in La Tech? But six wins. You know what I mean? Like, their down year was a bowl eligible year.
They still went to a bowl game. That's right.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about, that he's set an expectation of success. An ugly year looks like six wins, and that's a good expectation to have. That's a difference of what we've had in the past. Of Dan McCartney got four wins. I'll say this,
that the last time we had a coach do this kind of thing, we fired him, right? And that's what I say. Daryl Dickey did a great job, right, with what he had, but then he fell victim to his own standard. He was getting, you know, 5-6 wins in Sun Belt Conference, and then he dropped to 3 wins, right? 2 wins, whatever it was. So, I mean, like...
And that's a good problem, I think.
Yeah, yeah. If
a coach is consistently only hitting 6, then at that point, if you've got an expectation of 8 wins in a season, then bring in somebody else that can start getting us to 8 wins again instead of just 6 wins. That's a great problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's a, you know, like, yeah, I think that that's right. You can have a coach that gets stale. Kind of need a new voice in the not necessarily the locker room, but maybe in the cities, you know, in the high schools or something like that. I don't know. In college football, it is different because you don't have guys that are around 15 years and tune out their coach anymore, right? You know, there's turnover, and so, you know, like, I think you gotta maintain a standard. I think that's important. I think we're nearing that level. Like, we're getting into those talks, right? It's like, well, hey, you went to the conference championship game last year. What's a reasonable expectation for North Texas next year? We won 9 this year. Is it 8? I don't know. I think maybe. You know, again, if you look at all these games and say 50-50, and really it comes down to coaching staff and recruiting and preparing your team for those games, then you can say, well, yeah, that's on the coach, right? The coaching staff to get the team prepared to play mistake-free football, to win those games. So you can say, hey, 8 wins next year should be your goal. Anything less than that will be tolerated. Sure, you'll be kind of allowed for special circumstances. But, I mean, say if we go 3 and whatever next year, you, like, look at Littrell, I'm like, what's going on there, guy, right?
Yeah, you set a certain level of expectation. You know, you took us to the conference championship game this year. Next year, I think anything below 7 wins will be a disappointment.
Then we fire him like we fired Dan McCartney in the middle of a game. Yeah, I mean, I think we're all on the same page, all the reasonable fans. I think we all see the same thing. There are a couple of hotheads, and that's fine. Every fan base needs a hothead. I think that's the other part of being a better program, is that you have the more unreasonable people care. And so you can't be like, if you're either with us or against. I mean, that's part of the game. Like, you go to Alabama, and you don't win 11 games, and then people are like, what's going on? You guys suck. So, I mean, you know, that's part of the gig. If you want to be a good player, you want to have fan support, you want to have people excited and rabid about the team, passionate about the team, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get bloggers blogging. You're going to get, you know, former players podcasting. That's what happens. And that's a good thing, yeah.
Every team needs an Austin the Exterminator Rogers, I think.
George Dunham, who are you? Come to the games. Lose a game, get fired. That's the Austin. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. We're going to do another one. I mean, we got signing day in a couple days. Maybe day of, maybe a couple days after. We're going to try to get Calvin Miner on. We were talking on Twitter, and we were talking about, you know, getting insight. You know, we didn't play on these teams. He did. He could tell us some things. And we want to hear from him. I think it's good. We need more of that in this program. There's like a farming analogy I'm making here, and I can't quite make it. I'm not quite a farmer.
Yeah, I'm from the inner city, so I have no idea.
I don't know, man. I just throw stuff in the trash. I don't know what you're talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. Go Mean Green.
Go Mean Green.